Chapter 4. The next day, the ghost was very weak and tired. The terrible excitement of the last 4 weeks was beginning to affect him. His nerves were completely destroyed, and he jumped at the smallest noise. He stayed in his room for 5 days, and finally decided to forget about making the bloodstain reappear. If the Otis family didn't want it, they clearly didn't deserve it. Unfortunately, he didn't have any control over his apparitions. It was his solemn duty to appear in the corridor at least once a week. For the next 3 Saturdays, he patrolled the corridor as usual between midnight and 3 o'clock. Now, however, he took every possible precaution to keep from being seen or heard. He removed his boots and walked as lightly as possible on the old wooden floors. He wore a large black cape and was careful to use the rising sun lubricator for oiling his chains. He had to admit that it was an excellent product. Although he took all of these precautions, the twins didn't leave him in peace. Strings were continuously being stretched across the corridor. He tripped over them constantly, until one night he had a terrible fall down the staircase. This last insult made him furious. He resolved to make one final effort to assert his dignity and social position. He decided to visit the insolent twins the following evening in one of his most famous forms, the Headless Earl. The transformation into the Headless Earl was complicated. It took him 3 hours to get ready. Finally, he looked in the mirror, and he was happy with what he saw. At 1:15, he appeared in the corridor. When he reached the room occupied by the twins, the door was a little open. Wishing to make an effective entrance, he opened the door quickly. A heavy bucket of water fell on him. He was soaked. At the same moment, he heard screams of laughter coming from the twins' beds. The shock to his system was so great that he ran as fast as he could to his room. The next day, he stayed in bed with a severe cold. His only consolation was that he had not taken his head with him. If he had done that, the consequences might have been very serious. He had now lost all hope of ever scaring this rude American family. He contented himself with patrolling the corridors in slippers. For fear of catching a cold, he wore a thick red scarf. The final insult he received occurred on the 19th of September. He had gone downstairs to the great entrance hall. Here he was sure that he would be safe. It was about 2:15 in the morning, and as far as he could tell, no one was awake. He decided to check if any of the bloodstains still remained. As he was walking towards the library, 2 figures suddenly jumped out on him from a dark corner, screaming, "Boo!" in his ear. He panicked, which under the circumstances was only natural. He ran towards the staircase, but found Washington coming towards him. He was surrounded on all sides by his enemies. He quickly vanished into the great iron stove. Fortunately for him, it wasn't lit. He was forced to return to his room through the chimneys and the ventilation system of the mansion. He arrived in his own room in a terrible state of dirt, disorder, and despair. After this, he was not seen again on any nocturnal expedition. Eventually, the Otis family found other ways to distract themselves. The minister resumed his great work on the history of the Democratic Party. His wife organized wonderful social dinners. The boys played baseball, poker, and other American national games. Virginia spent a lot of time with the young Duke of Cheshire. He had come to spend the last week of his holidays at Canterville Chase. The two young lovers spent a lot of time riding horses through the English countryside. It was generally assumed that the ghost had permanently left the mansion. Mr. Otis wrote a letter to Lord Canterville informing him of its disappearance. Lord Canterville replied, expressing his happiness and congratulating the minister and his wife.